Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
I didn't realize that was John Boudreau doing the traffic. He sounded like a professional traffic guy.
He did.
I shouldn't just give away that he's not the professional. He is a professional traffic guy, but he also does a lot of producer work.
He does. He does. Yeah. Nice job. Good job, John. He went by his full name. Sometimes he goes by Johnny B.
Mm.
Maybe that's more of a producer or like an on-air, almost like a DJ persona. Whereas traffic, you need to be a little more buttoned up. I don't know if I want to get my crucial traffic information from somebody who's going with nickname, first name, first initial of the last name.
He wouldn't remember either that Johnny B. Good was probably one of the lesser football movies ever made.
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, it was Anthony Michael Hall as the very, very, very unlikely star quarterback of a high school, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, I don't think that was even part of the plot. It was that Anthony Michael Hall, when he was still super skinny, Anthony Michael Hall was supposed to be, right? Was he supposed to be the star quarterback?
I think so.
And they didn't even address the fact that, like, there's no way in hell this kid would be the actual quarterback.
That's unlike Can't Buy Me Love, that's an 80s movie that I suppressed deep into my memory.
Yeah.
I brought up Can't Buy Me Love earlier in the show. That's why I'm bringing that up now. Question on Twitter. This feels like a trick question. If you guys had to predict what day the Texans will play on Wild Card Weekend, which would it be, Saturday or Sunday?
Okay, if it's versus the Bills especially, it's going to be Saturday afternoon.
If it's versus anybody,
right.
They've literally, I checked this. They've been in the playoffs 5 times. Literally every Wild Card round weekend for the Texans, the game has been Saturday at 3:35 Central time.
But that's been with the Bengals. That's been the Oakland Raiders with Connor Cook starting. That hasn't been versus, like, say, the Steelers. If they drew the Steelers, if they ended up with the 3 seed and they drew the Steelers, that's going to be a primetime game.
Just you think?
Because it's the Steelers.
Okay.
They just draw.
Even with Duck Hodges?
It doesn't matter. It's the Steelers, I think. Okay. That'll be our wager. On the 3% chance that that's the matchup.
Yeah.
Then,
I'd rather find something else I know might happen to wager with you on. But
if it's going to be the Bills, then yeah, it'll be. Especially
sure.
The Bills.
Yeah.
Titans. It doesn't. Yeah, then it's definitely going to be Sunday.
Okay, so
Saturday.
So if they play the Steelers. This is interesting. Okay, so the other matchups, Wild Card Weekend, the other one in the AFC, because that would mean that the Texans had bumped up to the 3 seed. So the Chiefs. So you think networks would see the Steelers and the Texans as a sexier matchup than the Chiefs and the Bills with Patrick Mahomes, the defending MVP?
Boy, that's all right. Well, then now we're going head to head. Well, no, because that one, it'll be one AFC game on Saturday and one on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm just saying, the least sexy game is the one that gets the Saturday 3:30 slot.
Yeah, all the NFC matchups will be pretty good ones.
Because the NFC one might involve the Cowboys, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It'll involve the Eagles for sure. That's a big market that just won a
Texans
Super Bowl a couple
damned
years ago.
To that because of Pat Mahomes. Screw you, Pat Mahomes. I'm sick of him ruining all my fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes is going to be bigger than Devlin Hodges.
Yeah,
okay, so
yeah,
good call.
Yeah.
So. All right, so yeah, so almost 100% chance that the Texans.
Did we make a bet?
Or
did we not consummate it?
No, we didn't make the bet. You said, because you said you didn't want to take it, and then you argued as to why you would have won the bet, and then there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Here
also, Johnny B. Good, I've been wrong twice this segment already. I'm looking at Anthony Michael Hall from Johnny B. Good, and that was after he'd gone through puberty.
I thought
and
it
he
was
actually,
too.
He looked pretty good.
He's
there.
In a
like,
Letterman
looked,
jacket on the cover of the box.
He could have been a quarterback at that point. Yeah.
He went on to play Mickey Mantle, I want to say, in that movie about Roger Maris.
That's right. Oh, yeah. He turned into a really, we had him on. We interviewed him about that. He's turned into a much different guy than skinny little 16 candles.
And Rusty from Vacation.
Yeah. He really blossomed.
He did, yeah.
He's the rare child star that actually got better looking and more likable as he got older. Usually they get worse and worse. They go downward spiral. And then you have like some manage to keep it even. Like I would say Ron Howard was likable as a kid.
Yep.
And then
Opie.
Stayed likable as an adult and successful as an adult.
Yeah.
As a producer and director, not as an actor. But most of them go way downhill, or they're annoying to begin with. Remember the kid in Three's Company? That little bastard? Oh, he was despicable.
Oh, he was
just so annoying.
You talking about the Ropers? When the Ropers?
No. Oh, wait, not Three's Company. Oh, who's the boss? I'm thinking of who's the boss.
Who's the boss?
Yeah, who's the boss? That little kid.
Yeah.
Super annoying. And he never, it's not like he got better as he got older or anything.
Alyssa Milano got better as she got older.
But she wasn't, okay. That's partly. because she's about my age, and I think we might be exactly the same age, and I think I thought she was hot when I was like a 12-year-old and she was a 12-year-old.
Yeah, and then
she grew up, so she stayed the same for me.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. She maintained her hotness.
Dicey. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like if you were like 30 years old when Alyssa Milano was on just as the cute kid, and then all of a sudden you fast forward to 10 years later, it's got to be kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah, a little weird.
Luckily those two girls from the Olsen twins, luckily they it's not like they ever developed into like, damn, the Olsen twins are hot. They developed into like, they're kind of weird and scary. They're very pretty, but they scare me. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, even the creepy twin syndrome times 20.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very rich, though.
Yeah, they are.
They created quite a brand, the Olsen
twins.
Oh,
don't get me wrong. I'd use them for their money in a heartbeat.
You're just saying their vibe. Yeah. I gotcha. The Texans, where were we? J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt.
For that.
That's okay. J.J. Watt's press conference on... Tuesday, he led into it by talking about the reasons for coming back.
Yeah, I feel extremely excited about being able to be back in the practice field with the guys. It's the medical team here has done a great job, and there's obviously an element of risk involved as well that I understand and we understand. But to me, the opportunity to play in the playoffs, the opportunity to try and help this team win football games. It's just, there's nothing that I want more, and there's nothing that it's built into me. I want to be on the field with the guys, and I feel really good. We've worked extremely hard at rehab. We've had a very smooth process, and everything's been going extremely well. So I'm really, really excited to get back on the field with everybody and to be back out there helping my team and playing for the city.
Over under on number of sacks J.J. Watt gets in his first game back.
Ooh.
7.
Over.
I do feel good. Look, my memory of Terrell Suggs coming back from an Achilles tendon tear far earlier than anybody expected him was in him abusing a young Derek Newton for a sack very early in that Ravens game.
Yeah.
Back in 2014.
Yep.
So I almost feel with injuries like this, the very freshest, most explosive you're going to get out of J.J. Watt is going to be when he's really feeling with that adrenaline rush. So I would not be surprised if he goes off with a flurry on that first series or the second series.
Fresh legs,
yes,
Seth.
Fresh legs.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be good the rest of the game. I'm just saying I'm preparing myself. I'm almost talking myself into the fact that J.J. is going to come out and have some freakish, like, 2 sacks and 2 plays performance or something.
God, can you imagine?
On the first two.
That place will explode.
And as people have pointed out, look, it's not like J.J. coming back all of a sudden turns the Texans into a guaranteed slam dunk team that can beat the Ravens or something. It certainly does not. But the chance of a game-clinching sack in the fourth quarter, the chance of him forcing an interception in the fourth quarter when it matters, those chances have improved drastically because there simply aren't guys on the team right now that are giving you that kind of production.
I think the turnover thing you touch on is a huge thing because this team, the Texans, are going to be facing teams that are... You can make an argument the Bills are a better team than the Texans right now. Like on a neutral field, I think there are odds makers that on a neutral field would consider favoring the Bills over the Texans. The Texans have a big advantage at quarterback, but the Bills have a lot of stuff going for them right now. And that's their first round opponent. They're going to be punching up the entire playoffs. And one of the ways you even that out is by winning the turnover battle. There's nothing they're getting out of the front seven right now that's causing quarterbacks to have to throw off time, off rhythm, or that's putting pressure on a quarterback where you can get get a strip sack or something to give give your offense a short field to work with.
Right, and I think they've the Titans game, their run defense did what they had to do, and that was impressive, so that was good. But they're not creating tackles for a loss the same way they were when J.J. was in there. They're not getting the sacks. They're not doing all those things that are really, what J.J. does, he brings you a drive killer. Because that's where it really shows up is, hey, that one tackle for a loss or a sack on a series, it doesn't win the game for you, but it might kill that drive right there. You know, and you only get 12 drives in a football game. So the fact that JJ, I think, is going into this with his eyes wide open, and he talked several times about the threat of injury and how comfortable he is with that. I was listening to his press conference and I got really amped for it, because this is everything you want your athletes to be, right? Where everybody thinks they're worried that guys care too much about money. JJ, I will guarantee you, has had zero pressure from Bill O'Brien on this. There's not anybody that would have told any player in the league, hey, I want you to come back from this pec tear in 2 months. It wouldn't even be on the table. JJ is going to make his money no matter what. JJ, for the longevity of his career, probably shouldn't do this, but he just flat out wants to win football games, and you only get so many chances to be in the playoffs. Like, this is everything you want your professional athletes to be, or that fans want them to be. That's what JJ's doing right now, and it's really cool. I got excited for it, because this is going out and just literally sacrificing your body for the good of the team, and it takes a lot of guts to do it. So I'm just psyched to see the display of really selflessness and just being a team player. It's really cool.
It is pretty cool. I'll say this, and I'm not saying this that this is JJ's motivation with it, Seth, but you brought it up, you know, in terms of players trying to preserve. Most players are in preservation mode while JJ's in want to get back on the field mode. I do think this is going to help JJ if there are contract talks in the offseason. I do think the optics of finishing a season on the shelf 3 out of 4 years is something that doesn't, that is a leverage reducing thing, obviously, for him to, if he were to have just gone into the offseason having not gotten back on the football field. I do think this is something that if they do have contract talks and there's 2 years left on his deal, both unguaranteed years, JJ is a guy that they've engaged in early contract talks before, so the precedent is there. This is better for him from a contract standpoint to have gotten back on the field.
Well, except that I don't know, because there's also, I think there's a very, very good chance he re-injures it, as JJ knows and understands. Because, you know, Dr. David Chow, the pro football doc, one thing he said was that you can improve certain things, but you can't change biology.
Yes.
And there's certain things that have to happen for that tendon to truly and completely heal. And frankly, I don't know. Maybe they've used something. Maybe there's some kind of new technique or biological agent or something, all of which would be perfectly legal. Maybe they're doing something revolutionary and it actually has healed the body faster. But barring that, the chance that he re-snaps it would be pretty high compared to if he waited 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah. So I wonder if he were doing it strategically, I think he might be better off now, because now there's a good chance that it comes out with him just finishing the season injured again.
Yeah.
Or having to have surgery again.
Yeah. Yeah. If you are excited about JJ Watt coming back, don't go to Dr. David Chow's website.
Yeah,
because it'll completely. You sent me the screen cap of it. I'm like, well, this dampens my spirit, because he's bringing truth. I mean, medical truth to it.
I would read it to you if I'd go back through my old screenshots. The problem is, because it's Christmas time, I've got 400 pictures of my daughter's cat on here. I've got here it is. The Texans star. So this is from Dr. David Chow, pro football doc. Tore his pectoral tendon October 27th, and the typical recovery is 4 to 6 months. Just shy of 2 months, the Texans have activated his practice window with an intent for him to play for the playoffs. Congratulations to the Texans medical team on a great quick recovery. However, one cannot speed up biology. I fully expect the Texans to utilize Watt for the playoffs, as an 80% JJ Watt is better than most of the defensive ends in the league. However, there is no way that he will be 100%, and it does carry some risk of re-injury and re-rupture. Rupture is a much worse word, which I'm sure J.J. Watt is aware of. The decision to rush back is being made to try and help his team advance in the playoffs. Best of luck to him. And I think that's right. Like, I think that's – it really needs to be applauded, and it's honestly a great example to set for younger players, depending on what situation you're in. I think for certain guys, honestly, it would be dumb to do this because you're potentially affecting your future career. JJ's gotten all the individual accolades he wants, he could ever really ask for. And right now, it's about chasing that ring. And even though their chances might not be great this year, anytime you have Deshaun Watson, there's a chance.
Yeah.
And this is strictly, hey, I'm going to come back and try to win football games in the playoffs.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you in that this is super admirable. It's very exciting. And it's rare, I think. I think there's a lot of guys that would have, not only wouldn't have the healing powers to get back on the field, but wouldn't have had the want to get back on the field. And J.J. wants to, and I think it's great. And at the press conference, you could tell, very emotional about it earlier this week, talking about wanting to get back on the field for his teammates and for the city. I think it's genuine. There is one person who is, in addition to the rest of the city, should be really excited about J.J. Watt's return. Really excited. A teammate. We'll tell you who it is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, Whitney's a hard worker. I mean, you guys know Whitney works very hard. He puts a lot of time in. It's so important to him. He's here early in the morning. He stays late. He tries to do whatever he can to do what's best for the team. He's an excellent teammate. We want Whitney back. We want Whitney back here, and we want him to be a part of our team for a while. So it was good. It was good to see him, you know, break through with a sack. But he does a lot of other things other than that, you know, that help us win.
It's Bill O'Brien from the game on Sunday. Or no, I'm sorry, on Saturday, following the game, post-game show, post-game press conference. And those are his thoughts on Whitney Mercilus. And talking about wanting Whitney to be back. Whitney's in a contract year, of course. He's going to be a free agent after the season. And things were looking much better for Whitney Mercilus from a statistical standpoint earlier in the season. He was AFC Defensive Player of the Week, I want to say, in week two. He had much better numbers earlier in the year when J.J. Watt was out there. Whitney Mercilus, weeks 1 through 8. So those are the 8 games that J.J. Watt played in this year. Whitney Mercilus, 5.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, 8 QB hits, 4 forced fumbles. Weeks 9 through 16, the weeks without J.J. Watt, Whitney went from 5.5 sacks down to 2 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, down to 2 tackles for loss. He's still hitting the quarterback on a fairly regular basis, 7 QB hits. In that time frame, no forced fumbles, though. And this goes back to, Seth, what you and I were talking about in the previous segment. Not just J.J. Watt forcing turnovers, but J.J. Watt drawing enough attention to allow his teammates to go force turnovers. When Whitney was on that spell earlier this year where it felt like he was strip-sacking the quarterback on a weekly basis, it was obviously when J.J. Watt was out there. There is no Houston Texan teammate of J.J. Watt's happier to see J.J. Watt, I would think, than Whitney Mercilus.
Yeah, and some of that, I mean, even... You know, if J.J. had stayed here the entire year and been healthy, it's not like Whitney could have kept up that same pace True. That he had at the beginning of the year when it was – because people love to do that thing where, oh, in 3 games, he's on pace to have 29 sacks. And yeah. No, it doesn't work out that
way. I love doing that because yeah. I can show off my arithmetic skills.
He's the – so he wouldn't have kept up at that same pace. But it is – when a good player like J.J. goes out – and, you know, Gary Walker was a guy that was underrated when he was here with the Texans because we were an expansion team. But he made Pro Bowls with multiple teams. He was a really, really good player. When Gary Walker went out of the game, all of a sudden, it was, you know, you can talk about how it affects scheme and whatnot. But the actual feeling on the field is everything gets harder. You get, like, everything, the attention that Gary would get all of a sudden gets all devoted, like, because I played next to Gary, I got all that attention. So I'd get double-teamed a lot more, and everything gets a lot more violent. And that's how it is for those guys when J.J. leaves. Everything gets a lot more violent. Everything gets a lot tougher. So all of a sudden, when a guy comes back, when a really good player comes back, it's amazing just how much easier it feels. And it's, yes, you're going to get fewer chip blocks. You're going to get fewer double-teams. But on a down-in, down-out basis, it just feels easier. You asked me earlier what it would mean in the locker room. I don't know about the locker room because he's been there. On the actual football field, it just feels easier, which is a nice place to be. It's nice when football feels easier all of a sudden in the middle of a playoff run.
So what you're saying right there is what DJ Reader is probably thinking to himself, what Angelo Blackson is probably thinking to himself, what Brandon Dunn. These are all guys that played your position.
Right.
And J.J. Watt is the Gary Walker in this analogy that you're making here. These guys are going into, not this week because J.J. won't play this week, but when they play in the opening round of the playoffs against whoever it is they're going to play, they're going into that week just in a way better frame of mind.
Yeah, and it is. It's also that kind of, what was the movie? I've referenced this movie before, and I always forget the name. You remember that Clint Eastwood movie where they're all waiting for the Swede to come back? Because Clint Eastwood plays this drill sergeant, and everybody acts Stand like, by. Oh, this guy, the Swede, is going to come back, and he's going to kick Clint Eastwood's ass. The Swede comes back, and he actually gets his ass kicked by
Heartbreak Ridge?
Heartbreak Ridge, yeah. So, like, let's imagine the part where the Swede gets his ass kicked never happens. The Swede, when in the way they feel about J.J. Watt, might be kind of the way those guys felt about the Swede.
I got
you. Like, oh, wow, yeah, okay. You got another thing coming, Tennessee Titans. Well, no, let's see. It'll probably be the Bills.
Probably
Josh
the Bills,
Allen. Man. Josh Allen, your pasty white ass. We got the Swede coming in. It's J.J. Watt.
His name's J.J. Watt.
Nice to meet you.
He's the Swede. He's the Swede.
You can't kick Clint Eastwood's ass, but it'll kick yours.
Yeah, now I'm going to be on the trailer for Heartbreak Ridge. Your Johnny B. Goode reference has me in a... 80s movie trailer. Yeah, because you showed me a little clip of the trailer where he's walking down the street with a classic cheesy 80s strut going.
He's got a cheesy 80s jumpsuit on.
Yeah.
He's wearing a full-blown jumpsuit.
Yeah, yeah. And now I've got bookmarked a bunch of just movie trailers. Not even movies. I just want to watch the trailers.
He's bobbing his head. Do you even remember, was he supposed to get a football scholarship?
I only saw that movie once.
Alabama or something? Yeah, I've
it's
only
not
seen
high on my
too.
Rewatch list.
Can I justify watching that for work purposes this afternoon? I think I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we do a movie review on it? It's a football movie.
Yeah, for okay. Sure. For sure. Judging by the text page volume today...
I don't know if anybody's
not
listening.
Not a ton of people out there anyways.
I know Joan's listening. She wished us a happy day after
Christmas.
She did.
Christmas. That's nice of her.
Thanks, Joan.
You know what I'll do? Since whatever constituency of the audience is listening right now, whatever this is now, it was like a tenth of that at best in the 6 o'clock hour. I will reissue my plea to the Texans to never do again what they did on Tuesday when they put out a cryptic email saying that there is now a media session at 11:30 today, that there's now a press conference.
Yeah, it freaked you out.
Didn't say who it was with.
Yeah.
Didn't say why. Just said.
Just the day before, Bill O'Brien had kind of deflected any talk of JJ coming back. So
just 2 days before, Deshaun Watson was grabbing at his ankle for about 20 straight snaps.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't, Texans, I get it. Like, there's probably a degree of drama that they're trying to build, right? Because it's a big news thing. JJ coming back. Don't ever do that again. And don't ever do it again on Christmas Eve because it scared me. It frightened me.
You know, the other thing I would say about Whitney is... You know, we talk about how that early production was unlikely to be matched. Yeah, there's a sack after sack after sack every week. He had games this year after that four-game stretch where he had all the sacks. He had games where he had more hurries than in any of those games. You know, he's had several games. Indianapolis, he had four hurries. Jacksonville, he had four hurries. Kansas City, he had a few. So, like, he was actually, in some respects, more productive on a down-by-down basis. That's why sacks are such a bad barometer sometimes. Yeah. And I'm not saying that Whitney's having the equivalent of a 15 sack year by any means. It's just that I don't think the performance has been quite as drastically different as it might.
A couple of those games you just mentioned, though, JJ was still playing it. Like, JJ was still around for Kansas City.
Oh, yeah,
still around for the first Indy game. So, Whitney, and as you said, Seth, along with all the lunch pail crew in the middle of the defensive line, all very, very happy to have JJ Watt back on the field. You were jokingly putting an over-under number out there for sacks. Let's forget about sacks. What do you think about snaps? If there's 60 snaps in a game for a Buffalo offense,
yeah,
how many snaps do you expect J.J. Watt to be out there?
I want to say 20. But that might be, I don't know, if you might have to physically restrain him to limit him to 20 sacks. But maybe you go in and just say it's only second long, it's only third long, it's only like obvious passing situations. We don't want you to put yourself in harm's way at all. And I would imagine he'd be more open to that than maybe he had been in the past, just to limiting himself. Because the more times, I really feel like the more, every time he punches with his left arm, every time he has to make any kind of a pressing motion, you've got a chance of re-tearing that pec again.
Do you think the Bills go after the shoulder?
I don't think so because I don't know how you would specifically other than now do they
chip?
Go do they
you know,
go at him?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
you know,
if
like
they
chip,
actually
you know,
chipping
like
if you're chipping at the shoulder?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like I would imagine when you know as a former defensive lineman if you knew that a ball carrier or somebody had a certain injury
if they had ribs or something you're just trying to hit him harder. It's harder to target specific body parts than you might think. And,
that's why I ask.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I hadn't really thought of that just because I think of it as more of a I think of a pec tear as something that you could probably hit it all you want.
Yeah.
That's not what's going to damage it. What's going to damage it is if you have to move explosively again.
Right.
You know, JJ talked about doing all the ballistic stuff that he's tested through. Ballistic is anything violent and fast. So like that punching motion. So anytime he has to punch, I would say if they run at him to really test his strength and to see how he feels, because if he can't bench press out, if he can't kind of create separation, then he might have an issue just standing up to the run.
I'm just thinking,
but again, which is again why I think you put him out there where they really don't want to run.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking of the right tackle who's blocking him when you're doing that hand wrestling with him or whatever, knowing that the dude's got a torn left pec. Are you trying to do things with that left arm that might force it into? That might put J.J. Watt in a position where he can't play.
I don't think so, just because, and I'm just trying to think of.
You might be overthinking.
Yeah, I think in any situation like that, you might try to anticipate how his game's going to change. Maybe you don't think he's going to bull rush you as much, but more than anything, you're just trying to get him. You're just trying to minimize
him. Keep him off your quarterback.
Yeah.
All right, final segment coming up. Darren Revelle is going to jump in with us. A little gambling talk, a little business of sports talk, and whatever else. I wonder what his fear factor thing is this week. I need to look that up before we get him on. Darren Revelle does some very strange things if he loses bets that he loves talking about. So we'll spend a few minutes with Darren Revelle of the Action Network. That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we are efforting Darren Revelle. Looking at his Twitter timeline, that's usually my show prep for Darren Revelle as I go see, you know, what are the things he's tweeting about. Because he's a fairly notorious tweeter. I like Darren Revelle. I've enjoyed having him on during football season this year.
Sounds like a slur somehow, doesn't it?
What's that?
He's a notorious tweeter. Yeah. Or is that not a slur? It sounds like a crime or something.
No, but his Twitter persona is very different than, I think, the persona of the guy that comes on the air with us. Because I think people read his tweets as if they have a certain tone of condescension or, I don't think he's that way. Like I enjoy talking to Darren on the phone. So we're efforting him. If we find him, great. If not, then we move on. Final segment of the show for us today. He's in a real beef with Ryan Russillo today over something.
Sounds like it started over. Now, and this is interesting because on Twitter now, there's an interesting thing. I don't want to get too down into the weeds with this. There's a way that you can retweet somebody where you can show a video from somebody's Twitter account.
Mm.
Where it doesn't really show that person's account or the original tweet or anything. You can click on the video to see that the person who tweeted originally, but it's kind of a way to make somebody else's video look like your own.
Yeah.
So I don't really see the big issue with it. Some people feel like it's way out of bounds. So Darren did this thing where he embedded somebody else's video and then ended up. So Ryan Russillo has an issue with him doing that, apparently, as well as a few other people.
Okay.
I don't, you know, one of the best people on Twitter right now is, what's his name, the old basketball player.
Rex Chapman.
Rex Chapman does the blocker charge videos, and almost all of his tweets are this, where he kind of just, he links to the video, he doesn't give the person, like, he doesn't retweet their tweet or anything, and nobody gives him a hard time.
No.
So why do they give some people a hard time and not others?
Because I my guess is that, people don't fully understand maybe how the videos get, how the people who originally put the video up get credit for it.
Yeah.
And Darren points out, hey, her video now has 637,000 views. It had 1,500 when I tweeted it. So the person with the original video is benefiting from this.
Yeah.
And there's a better chance someone's going to watch the video if it's on Darren Revelle's account than if he's retweeting somebody.
I've done this a couple times. And I will say, it feels a little dirty when I do it, but only because I think other people have tried to. I've seen people shame other people about it. So I always try to, so I don't do it anymore.
You don't take somebody's video and put it in your tweet as if it's your own?
Yeah. I don't know. But I'm off Twitter. I haven't been tweeting as much. I feel like I started off this season on a tear.
Yeah.
I was tweeting like a fiend.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I just lost my nerve. It's just, you know what it is? It's the one comment. Every time when there's tweet anything. And there's just the one moron that comes back with something so stupid. I don't even mind aggression. I don't mind somebody calling me stupid. I don't like when people just have responses that don't make any sense at all. And then that person thinks they're being super smart. And that ruins it for everybody. I could have 99 people complimenting me. The one damn moron, it messes it up for me because I can't get it out of my head the rest of the day.
Mm.
It's a me problem, but I don't know how to fix it.
Well, I wish you'd get over it because we miss you on these Twitter streets.
It's not worth the stress. It's not worth the time that I spend preoccupied thinking about
the one
person.
I'm just telling you, we miss your tweets. I don't care what physiological effect it has on you. I miss your sense of humor on Twitter.
Oh, so one thing we were discussing, and you brought up a great question, was will people target J.J. Watt's shoulder/pec area specifically? And you kind of caught me off guard with it because I hadn't thought about it in terms of actually, I don't think of this as an injury that you have to hit to injure. I worry about more the actual physical action of it. But we were talking off air about, okay, what are the ethics of actually going after somebody's injury? And maybe I wasn't completely forthcoming because, frankly, I've always felt like it's not a big deal to target somebody's injury.
So you've targeted before.
No, I haven't, because I never thought I was – I never felt I was gifted enough from, like, a body control perspective to actually target somebody's injury. I'm going to play my game regardless.
Yeah.
But if I had a known knee issue, or if I had a known rib issue or something like that – as long as somebody wasn't doing it in a dirty way. Now, going after somebody's knees is generally just dirty.
Yeah,
like, if you're actually going to dive at somebody's knees,
right,
it's hard. That's dirty whether a guy's knee is banged up or not.
No doubt.
I would think if a running back has ribs, if you know that he's got bruised ribs or something, I don't think that's unethical at all to really just to remember that when you're tackling them, they've got bruised ribs. Does that make me a bad person? I feel like because of the Karate Kid, there's a whole generation of people that think that somehow it's wrong to kick somebody in the leg when it's injured. When in that karate, right, they should have swept the leg.
He swept the leg. I think it was a healthy leg that he swept. I think there's some rule in karate about doing what he did, because I think he lost a point for it.
Oh, so he did something
Johnny
illegal.
Johnny Lawrence did. Okay. Yeah, I think. I'd need a karate expert to corroborate that.
Yeah.
Of course, that was back in 1984. The rules may have changed since then. It doesn't change the fact that Daniel LaRusso is an imminently leg-sweepable, face-punchable person.
I know if somebody... I remember in wrestling, somebody in actual amateur wrestling.
Yeah.
Somebody... I remember hearing people talk about once how a guy had an injured leg and the wrestler who was going against him was being dirty because he kept attacking that leg. And I remember thinking, like, why on earth would you not attack that leg?
Right.
Like, what am I only supposed to... Am I only supposed to single leg takedown with one leg? His other leg that maybe isn't the side I prefer to go to? Like, of course you attack that leg.
Yeah.
It's not like you're trying to do anything dirty to injure him. It's a weakness that your opponent has.
Right.
Right? Am I supposed to... Like, because otherwise, then I'm like... Then he's got an advantage by me staying away from the injured leg.
Yeah, no. If you're out there on the mat or in any athletic endeavor with an injury and people know about the injury, you got to go into it knowing they might target that thing. Yeah.
As long as you're not doing it just in a dirty way. So right. JJ, I think the way it becomes targeting JJ with his pec wouldn't be necessarily trying to hit the pec or anything, because that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it is running at him.
Yeah.
If you can run at him, if you double team him, let's see how he holds up and let's see. Now, the great thing about that, though, is that that's specifically what you want. You know, you're hoping, like JJ, when he came back with his club against the Patriots a few years back,
yep,
that club ended up kind of rendering him ineffective. The Patriots still didn't take any chances with him. They were double teaming him pretty much the whole first half that game. So, you know, maybe if teams do think, okay, we're going to try to run at JJ, as long as the Texans plan for it and know that JJ is getting double teamed, then it can still help out the defense.
God, I was just thinking the other day when I was doing my post about JJ the day of his press conference, and, man, I was thinking about how banged up he was at the end of 2015, because I'm trying to put into context just how amazing it is that he's going to be back on a football field less than 2 months after tearing a pectoral muscle. And by the way, he was asked about, in fact, Austin, we should give this exchange here, when somebody asked him about talking to Whitney Mercilus about it. It's cut number 18. Pull up cut number 18. Because we did learn a little something about the severity of JJ's injury in terms of just how torn the pectoral muscle was. Because he was asked a question about it. I think it was Sarah Barshop asked the question. She asked him about talking to former teammates who had suffered this before. Whitney Mercilus suffered a torn pectoral muscle. JJ mentions Christian Covington. And Sarah drops into the question, like, you know, Whitney had torn his. Now, he tore his off the bone, and I think we've got JJ just dropping this little nugget in here.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit early on about it. Talked to Cove about it. Cove was here last year. So there's been – I've talked to a couple guys about it and just their experience and, you know, just doing whatever I can. That's all it's been the last 2 months, is whatever I'm allowed to do, whatever the doctors and the – training staff says I can do, that's what I've done.
Okay, so we didn't have the question, but she asked the question, Sarah Barshop did, and mentioned, you know, Whitney tore his off the bone. And JJ, that wasn't in that cut, but right before that cut, he goes, so did I.
Yeah.
You know, he just dropped it in there. I don't think he was going out of his way to say, look at me, I tore mine off the bone too. But I think he was just clarifying that he had as well. And I just got thinking, Seth, like, you know, it's tough to compare this to J.J. Watt's accomplishments and feats. When you go, this is the most incredible thing he's ever done. I think I said that the day, the video that I did on Twitter. I think I said this is the most amazing thing that he's done. And I think it may be. It's tough to compare, you know, going out and getting 20 and a half sacks in a season or raising $37 million for a hurricane, you know, damage, you know, for hurricane victims to coming back from this. This is the one thing I can say feels like there's, you know, it feels like there's some degree of magic to it. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, wow, nobody's done this that we know of. This is defying, you know, medical.
Medicine
in some ways. And I got to thinking about the 2015 season. Like, the JJ was on the field at the end of that year. Remember, that was a year where he left the playoff game because basically his entire core had been ripped off his pelvis.
And he'd been playing that way for some time.
He'd been playing that way. He disclosed after the season on our show on the Triple Threat that he had been playing with the herniated disc in his back since, like, week 8 that season. And he had the club hand that year, too.
Yeah. So I think that he's played with injuries that we don't even know about, or that he had them for a while before he did. And I'm also, I'm looking at pictures. I've been looking at all these anatomical charts, but now I'm looking at actual pictures of human beings with their torn pec. I'm growing newly impressed with the fact that he's coming back.
Oh, because you can see the muscles?
Yeah, your whole pec sags down out of nowhere. It's disgusting. And so the fact that he's coming back from this is very impressive. I think just the biggest part is that knowing that there's a really big chance of re-injury. And that's the hardest psychological barrier to get over. And I think a lot of it is that he's been through this so many times before that you kind of train your brain to not worry about the re-injury. When you're out on the field, I always equate it to what I imagine it must be like for, think about the BMX stunt bike dudes. When they're on a ramp and they're doing these crazy jumps, we look at that and we're like, oh my gosh, that must be terrifying. I would imagine when they're doing it, they're dialed in and focused, and they're not thinking one bit about how much it's going to hurt when they fall down. That's kind of what happens when you have multiple surgeries and you come back from injuries like that. You just learn to focus and not think about it. And you know that it's a possibility, but that's not your task at hand, and you just focus on the task at hand.
Yeah. So we'll talk a lot tomorrow about we'll talk some week 17. I think – we know which way the wind's blowing with the Texans at this point, Seth.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing the Bills on Saturday in all likelihood, is my guess.
And one of our texters says, I don't get the fear of the Bills. They've had an easier schedule than New England this year. Other than Baltimore and New England, they didn't really play any good teams. I think, well, for one, they played Baltimore really tough. So that's worth noting. I think, two, it's that the specific matchup of the Bills presents some challenges and issues. For one, Josh Allen, if you look at his passing chart, kind of hits a lot of the areas that the Texans are really poor at defending.
He's really good
in the short area over the middle of the field, a lot of these intermediate routes. So there is that. Now, JJ being back goes a long way. The thing that really concerns me is Deshaun Watson versus that Buffalo defense. These Sean McDermott-style defenses have really been an issue for Deshaun Watson. Think Carolina Panthers this year, one of the worst games that Deshaun's ever played. That's the same style of defense as the Buffalo Bills. So They kind of have a way of making quarterbacks second-guess themselves. Remember the double clutching of the ball that we saw out of Deshaun versus the Panthers? That's the kind of thing that I fear with Deshaun Watson. So a lot of it just comes down to the specific matchup. Yes, the Bills are probably not as good as their record says they are just because of their schedule and what they've done. But suffice it to say, they played a tough game versus the Ravens. They played a really tough game against the Patriots, who I don't think had the flu virus nearly as much as they did versus the Texans, and it was in New England.
They played the Patriots tough the first time, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they played the Patriots tough in both of the games this year. And you bring up the Carolina Panthers. Seth, I'll bring up the Buffalo Bills from last year. These two teams played each other in Week 6 last year. That was the third game of the Texans' 9-game winning streak. But it was a game that they struggled in. Deshaun struggled greatly in. That was the game that, I mean, if you're looking just for some sort of subjective way to look at what this Bills defense is like, Deshaun Watson was on a bus to Jacksonville 4 days after playing or 5 days after playing the Buffalo Bills last year. That was the game that the Texans played before Deshaun had to get on a bus because of a bruised lung and bruised ribs, broken ribs, whatever it was. They struggled with the Bills that day. They were trailing 13-10 with 2 minutes to go in the game. They wound up winning 20-13 because at that point, Nathan Peterman had entered the fray and replaced Josh Allen, but the Texans needed a field goal from Kymie Fairbairn to tie the game with a minute and a half to go. And then on the second play from scrimmage when the Bills got the ball back was when Jonathan Joseph jumped that route, picked off Nathan Peterman, and they end up winning that game 20-13. But the Bills gave the Texans everything they could handle that day. And it's pretty much the same Bills team, except Josh Allen is healthy this time.
And Josh Allen's he's just
a better
quarterback. He's refined. The weakness Josh Allen has is the thing that everybody thought would be his strength, which is his deep ball. He has a weapon in John Brown, the receiver, that could be absolutely lethal. It could be everything that Hollywood Brown is in Baltimore. I always want to say Hollywood Henderson. Hollywood Henderson so
I do
much.
Too.
The Texans are actually pretty good at defending the deep ball, so those kind of negate each other. I would also say I still give the Bills credit for beating the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day.
They beat them pretty good.
Now, the Cowboys, who knows from one week to the next what version of the Cowboys you're getting. But, they thumped up on the Cowboys.
Yeah. So, and
they did lose to the Browns, just like the Ravens.
Well, and they're going to go.
Not the Browns. What a weird year.
The Browns beat the Bills?
They beat the Ravens. They beat the Bills, yeah. The Browns, if you could just string those together in the playoffs, right. Then the Browns are actually a really good playoff team.
Very dangerous.
Yeah.
They'd be very dangerous. I'll tell you the one thing that I will be dialed in on a Sunday while I'm up there in the press box watching the Texans play is the scenario that could have the Raiders in the playoffs as the sixth seed. The Raiders are 7-8 right now. They're, by most people's accounts, they're in the bottom third of the league in terms of just the quality of the team, power rankings, DVOA, all that stuff. But here John Gruden has the Raiders, and I think there are four things that need to happen, if I'm not mistaken. The Titans need to lose to the Texans. That's an underdog right now. You know, the Titans are favored in that game because people think the Texans aren't going to play their guys. They need the Steelers to lose to the Ravens. Again, the Ravens are going to be playing RG3. It's in Baltimore, so we'll see what happens. They need the Colts to beat the Jags, oddly enough. Even though it looks like that shouldn't have any impact, they need the Colts to beat the Jags just to enhance the Raiders' tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. It enhances the whole strength of victory tiebreaker. And then the Raiders obviously need to win their game against the Denver Broncos. None of those things are crazy. And if all four of them happen, the Raiders at 8-8 will be going to the playoffs.
They're not crazy. They're just – it's almost like a toss of the coin to see as whether you get heads four times in a row.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's improbable, but it's not crazy.
I got to see what that four-team parlay would be.
And I guess the other thing I would say is, and this is what you have to remember to the person that asked what should the Texans necessarily be concerned with about the Bills, the Texans should be concerned with anybody they face in the playoffs because the Texans, if you look at point differential alone, the Texans have a lot of the hallmarks of an 8-8 football team. Credit Bill O'Brien for coaching them through some of these close victories. You could also argue that maybe some of the victories shouldn't have been as close as they were.
No doubt.
But you can't look at the Texans like they're definitively better than anybody they're going to face in the playoffs. Right. Everybody they face in the playoffs is going to be challenged. At this point, though, I don't know whether I fear, I shouldn't say fear, who would you worry about more, the Titans or the Bills? Because I think Derrick Henry wasn't at 100% the first go-around with the Texans.
Yeah.
And we'll have a better feel for it. There's something about facing the Titans three times in 4 weeks that I don't like.
That's the only thing that scares me. The Bills scare me more as a team than the Titans do. Mm-hmm. But the dynamic of having to beat a team, you know, the dynamic of playing a team a third time in 4 weeks is a tricky one. By the way, the parlay of all the four things the Raiders need to have happen in order for them to make the wild card.
Yeah.
17-1.
That's not ridiculous.
Not the craziest thing in the world.
No.
Yeah, it pays 17-1. I got to make sure I don't hit send on this bet. I do not want to be betting that 14 parlay at all. All right. We're
biggest
done.
Biggest mistake you made gambling today was when you told me, you talked me out of making a bet that you definitely would have won.
I know. Yeah. And then tried to convince you that you had actually made the bet 45 seconds earlier.
Tried a Jedi mind trick.
We made that bet, right, Seth? Go back and listen to the audio. All right. We're about out of time. In the Loop up next. And we will be back here at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
I'm going to go watch Johnny Be Good.
Yes. And you will do a movie review. We'll do that tomorrow. Until then, we'll see you at 6. Have a great day, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.